Wednesday! It's Wednesday, Wednesday Comics. I have no idea how to start this episode, because we're not doing song quotes.
You were listening, and that's how I would start it.
No, that's just a little odd. You are listening to The Obscure Gentleman, a weekly pop culture and comic... No, we're bi-weekly now.
Yeah, we are.
A bi-weekly pop culture and comic podcast dedicated to filtering all that stuff through the internet.
Yeah.
Or getting the internet to filter through us. Something like that.
We do, it's a bit of back and forth.
I'm your host, Aaron A. Alvarez, and who are you?
I'm Alex Mitchell.
All right.
And not your host.
Not even the co-host. You're just... Your energy form is here.
Yeah.
This is Wednesday Comics.
Wednesday Night Comics.
So we discuss comics on Wednesdays.
Or in comic personalities, people.
Anything related to comic books,
yeah.
Essentially. Except movies, we still save that for Mondays. So we have a Patreon, patreon.com/theobscuregentleman. You know the deal. You can donate as much or as little as you want. Perks, all that good stuff. Support the webcomic and the podcast by doing so. Also, give us a subscription if you want. And leave us a review. We would like that.
Share with your friends. Like our Facebook page, too.
Do whatever you got to do.
Follow us.
So without further ado, let's...
let's go.
Yeah, let's start.
Back together again, eh? Let's play.
Gang bang!
It was a firefight!
But I don't want to be a pirate!
What is the charge? Eating a meal? A succulent Chinese meal?
How can you stop?
This is a big one. Hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you.
You don't know what hard times are, Daddy.
Kiss my sweaty balls, you fat.
Oh, look. Rocks.
Game over!
You lose. Good day, sir.
No! No!
All right, so as promised from last week, this one's a whopper, as they say.
All right, what do we got? We got.
So this week we are going to be taking a look at a man and
a myth,
maybe
a legend.
If you want to put it that way, sure.
A legend.
So let's just skip all the formalities and let's just go head first into the deep end of the pool.
Alright.
Or maybe the shallow end, depending on how you look at this. So, Robert Kahn was born in New York City, New York.
In the Bronx. Wrath of Kahn?
Yes.
Okay.
In 1915, the son of Augusta and Herman Kahn, his father was from Eastern Europe and an engraver by trade.
An engraver? What is that, like a person that...
Like marble and stone.
Oh, okay.
From a young age, Kahn had an interest in drawing. After graduating from DeWitt Clinton High, the same high school that Stanley, Will Eisner, and a bunch of other famous dudes of that era graduated from.
Is that a coincidence, or is that just...
It's a coincidence.
Okay.
I mean, it's just, it was in the Bronx, and a lot of people from the industry, they grew up in that area, so...
Right.
So, after graduating from DeWitt Clinton High, he went to work for 6 months at Max Fleischer Studios.
Okay.
Where they made Popeye and Betty Boop cartoons. From there, he won a scholarship and studied art for around 9 months at the commercial art studio, Cooper Union, and the Art Students League. So, you know, his interest in art took off, and, you know, he started, you know, getting stuff done. I mean, and then the Fleischer stuff in general.
That is pretty cool, actually.
A lot of people did that, because it was, like, sweatshop art.
Yeah.
I mean, like, even Jack Kirby did stuff like that.
So, Fleischer's an interesting person, too.
Yeah,
but we don't have a cartoon podcast. So.
No. When the Depression hit, Kahn was forced to quit his beloved art school to contribute to the family income. Kahn began working at his uncle's garment factory. He despised the job, as he would go on to recount. It's difficult to put into words the loathing I felt. Robert Kahn met Milt.
Why does it seem like everyone, like, growing up has, like, an uncle or something that owns some shop or something that has nothing to do with what you want to do in life?
Back then, it was always like that. When Robert Kahn met Milton Bill Finger at a party when Khan was 19 and Finger was only 21.
Right.
At the time, Finger was working as a shoe salesman.
Again, it's like one of those things. It's something you don't want to do, but...
Born in Denver, Colorado, Finger had moved to New York City when he was very young and had grown up in an atmosphere of his father's tailor shop.
Oh my God.
No, I know. Everyone was making bricks or making suits.
Or shoveling dirt. I don't know.
When the shop closed during the Depression, Finger took a number of odd jobs to support his family, including clerking in a hat store, shoes, and even driving a taxi cab.
Okay, that's a bit more.
Finger and Khan discovered they shared a common fascination with comics, not comic books, which were just getting started at this time, but comic strips.
So like Garfield.
And Little stuff. Abner, stuff like okay, that. Right.
Obviously not Garfield, but...
The lucrative promised land of the cartooning profession. Khan decided to quit the garment business and try his luck as a cartoonist.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
He's going after his passion.
Yeah, as most of these guys working in, you know, like shoe stores and, you know, freaking haberdasheries and all that would want to do.
Khan's bedroom became a makeshift studio as Finger and Khan began collaborating, with Finger doing the writing and Khan doing the drawing. But to conceal his Jewish secret identity, just as Stanley Lieber had become Stan Lee and Jacob Kurtzberg had become Jack Kirby, Robert Khan also assumed a new name of his own creation, Bob Kane. So, this is the story. This is the story of Bob Kane.
Oh, God, no.
The creator, as he's labeled, of Batman. When Finger and Kane sold their first series to DC Comics, it was published with Kane's name only. Finger's writing credit was omitted. Whatever the reason, Bill Finger received no official credit for the story, and the Kane-only precedent was set.
What's up with that?
Well, we'll go into that. Rusty and His Pals, the strip which ran as a feature in Action Comics, in Adventure Comics, was a crude copy of Milt Caniff's Terry and the Pirates, also copied from Caniff's signature, Kane copied Caniff's signature as well.
Okay.
Like the stylization.
Yeah.
That's completely Milt Caniff's stylization.
Okay.
Which Kane took the liberty of altering to fit his name. So, their first comic was copied from something, and as was the signature. So you're going to start to see this a lot.
Okay.
After Rusty and His Pals, Kane, still employing Bill Finger as his anonymous writing partner, sold DC a character named Clip Carson. The character was a knockoff of Alex Raymond's Jungle Jim. While doing Clip Carson for Action Comics...
Is this like one of those, like, the dude from Johnny Quest, like one of those kind
of
guys?
It's one of those, like jungle heroes, yeah, like the explorers. Yeah, okay, thing, yeah.
Big barrel-chested dude with a knife and all that.
Yeah, okay. like Congo Bill.
Yeah. You just made that up.
That's real. Congo Bill and the Congorilla.
God damn it.
Bob Kane... Okay, while doing Clip Carson for Action Comics, Bob Kane developed a relationship with Action editor Vince Sullivan. DC had recently struck gold with Superman, and Sullivan was frantically hunting for a new mystery man. So, at the time, before they were called Superheroes, they were called Mystery Men.
Yeah.
That was just the term.
That's why that movie's called that.
Yes. With Ben Stiller.
Yes.
One Friday afternoon in 1939, Bob Kane asked Sullivan how much money Siegel and Shuster were making for doing Superman. Kane was shocked when the editor reportedly told him that the two Depression-era teenagers made about $800 a week from their breakthrough character.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money for back then, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's a...
It's a lot of money now.
A tremendous chunk of dough.
That's a decent amount of money now.
Sullivan also told a stunned Kane that he was looking for a new mystery man to headline another title he edited, Detective Comics. With stars in his eyes, Kane boasted that he could create that new hero over the weekend.
Okay.
Mimicking the Hawkman character seen in Alex Raymond's Flash Gordon. So, not Hawkman. This is the
other...
those characters with wings, yeah.
Yeah.
Kane would add a pair of mechanical wings and call his creation Birdman. The first sketch of Birdman, as Arlen Schumer first pointed out in Roy Thomas's Alter Ego magazine, was that Kane made a direct swipe from an issue of Flash Gordon's Sunday comic strip, right down to the twisting vine that encircles Flash's right arm, which became a twisting bat rope encircling Birdman's arm.
He clearly ripped this off.
He copied something.
It doesn't sound like he has an original idea in his head.
So Finger wasn't terribly impressed with Kane's concept. He didn't think a hero named Birdman would be accepted as a lead feature for a book titled Detective Comics. Finger suggested they instead pattern the new character after a pulp mystery man known as The Shadow.
Okay.
Kane maintained that he was inspired by several different sources to change the name of Birdman.
He's basically saying Bill Finger didn't think of shit.
Yeah, he's saying, over the years, he came up with many different reasons why the name was changed.
Okay.
So his story was never straight. Bill Finger recalled differently. I got Webster's Dictionary off the shelf, and I was hoping they had a drawing of a bat. And sure enough, it did. I said, notice the ears. Why don't we duplicate the ears? I suggested Bob draw what looked like a cowl. I suggested that he bring the nose piece down and make him mysterious and not show his eyes at all. I didn't like the wings, so I just suggested that he make a cape and scallop the edges so it would flow out behind him when he ran and it would look like bat wings.
It's so weird that, like, when you think of Batman, it's essentially what he just described. Yeah. And it seems so simple now, but going back and you had to kind of think of how would we do this? How would we make it work? And, you know... It's weird. You know?
And then he continues, he didn't have any gloves on, so we gave him gloves.
He didn't have gloves
on. Well, there are sketches of the original design floating around.
Yeah.
And it's essentially, it looks like Superman in a red outfit with a domino mask and mechanical wings.
That's terrible.
Yeah. So, that's brutal. And he's blonde.
Okay.
The next problem was the setting. What setting should the writer and artist use for their new hero's first front cover? The cover of the recent issue of Action Comics number 7 showed Superman dragging a terrified criminal high above the city. Kane decided his new hero should do exactly the same. So, he swiped a similar scene, substituting the figure he had swiped from Flash Gordon for Superman. So if you look at the Action Comics number 7 cover, and you look at the first appearance of Batman on that cover, he's using the image he swiped previously from Flash Gordon and just replaces Superman with that.
Okay.
So even, yeah.
That's
so
pretty bad.
After the weekend, Kane showed up at DC on Monday and submitted his work to Vin Sullivan. As promised, the editor loved it and commissioned Kane to come up with a story starring the mysterious new character who was to be called the Batman.
Okay. And I always like that older... Like, any new thing with Batman, whenever they depict Batman's early years, they always call him the Batman.
I kind of prefer that for some reason.
I like that, too. It adds this weird, like...
It makes him seem more mysterious. And
rather,
more,
oh, hey, it's Batman.
More of an urban legend sort of thing.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, Batman...
Like the Mothman.
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
So Sullivan expressed interest in Kane's new character, and Kane quickly negotiated a contract to deliver a set number of Batman stories per year. And by the way, Batman, how it was originally written, was Bat...
Bat-Man, like Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Okay.
All crediting Kane as the sole creator. Sullivan had no idea Finger had been instrumental in the superhero's creation, mainly because Kane hadn't told him.
What the
In Kane's mind... Bill Finger worked for him, not for DC, so any contributions Finger made to Kane's work actually belonged to Kane.
That's, okay, that's fucking ridiculous.
So yeah, so you'll see more of this as we go on. Kane himself once said that his very first contract with DC was different than Siegel and Schuster's Superman contract because his father, who was now working in the newspaper business, knew that comic strip creators and newspaper columnists made lots of money. So because he was not of legal age, he negotiated on Bob's behalf and got him ancillary rights a clause was written that promised him extra money on points in case Batman was used in other formats, movies, strips, books, or toys. This early contract his dad had negotiated formed the basis of the renegotiated contracts of later years.
And that's pretty much what everyone tries to get now. Is yeah. Like they want, like, all these merchandise rights.
But see, back then, this was such a new thing that kind of just... I mean, Lucas kind of looked on that, too. George Lucas.
Because he couldn't get what? He couldn't get...
the distribution rights or anything. So he ended up getting the toy rights.
Yeah.
Which paid off tremendously.
Yeah. Does he still get some of that, or...?
I think that's all been sold.
Okay, then.
Completely, so...
He's still got a lot of money from...
Oh, yeah. When Kane told Finger the big news that DC had bought the Batman character and that he was to appear on the cover of Detective Comics number 27, Kane somehow neglected to mention that the contract he had signed specified that he was credited as the sole creator of Batman.
So he
didn't even tell Bill Finger.
Okay, that's fucked up.
The first ever Batman story, The Case of the Chemical Syndicate, is credited solely to Robert Kane, despite the fact that it was written by Bill Finger. Okay. So there's no mention of Finger anywhere. In a 1965 letter to the fanzine Batmania, Bob Kane stated, "Although Bill Finger literally typed the scripts in the early days, he wrote the scripts from ideas that we mutually collaborated on, and many of the unique concepts and story twists also came from my own fertile imagination. Many a story I silently wrote by giving Bill the premise, and he took the ball from there." So
that's not... I mean...
But again, Kane is saying that...
He sounds like he's kind of, like, weird, like, in the head. Do you know what I mean? Like he doesn't sound completely like...
I think he sounds like an asshole.
No, he does sound like an asshole, but it sounds to me like there's something wrong with him, where it's like he's not able to piece together the fact that he's a piece of shit.
I think he knows, but I think he just... He wants people to think that he's a genius.
Okay.
After DC found out Finger was ghostwriting the Batman series for Kane, so eventually they did find out, they hired him directly. Finger wrote the next several years' worth of Bat stories after that and became known as the formative Batman writer.
Yeah.
Finger's stories, unlike Kane's, were not written silently but on paper, but still they couldn't credit him. So it was officially known by DC who was writing the stories.
Yeah.
He was officially hired by DC, but because of the legal bullshit from those contracts, he couldn't be credited. So he was getting paid for them, because before it was Kane would give him as much money as he wanted to give him.
Yeah.
But now DC's like, okay, you officially work for us, but we can't credit you. So
but you're still getting a paycheck.
Yeah.
And that's... I mean, I guess if it has to be that way, then that's fine.
Yeah. Despite his difficulties, Bill Finger persevered, leaving his prints all over the comic book industry. He earned several official bylines, including one as co-creator with Martin O'Dell on the original Green Lantern.
Oh, cool.
With fellow DeWitt Clinton High School alums, Erwin Hansen. So, again, that high school. A bunch of people come from there.
It seems really crazy, though.
Oh, there's, like, tons of names I could list. Like, when I was doing research for this, it was just name after name of famous person who went there.
Cool.
On the non-powered... Okay. With fellow DeWitt Clinton High School alum, Erwin Hansen, on the non-powered superhero Wildcat.
Okay.
He was also acknowledged as the sole creator of Robin, the Boy Wonder, Alfred, Batmite, Catwoman, Penguin, Two-Face.
So he's created essentially the Batman mythos.
For the most part, yeah.
And it sounds to me like...
He can't be credited.
But and it sounds to me like he also had his hand in creating the JSA.
In some of the
characters, yeah. In part of it, at least. I mean,
Wildcat and Green Lantern, yeah. And Green Lantern at the time was the chairman, so, yeah.
Yeah.
So, DC renewed Bob Kane's contract in 1968.
Why?
Although Kane was no longer drawing comics, his new contract stated that all future Batman stories would credit Kane as the sole creator of the character. Okay, so, before they had to, but now he made it that, essentially, after, say, he were to pass away, it would become... That would be how it has to be.
Yeah.
So, because before they were able to get away with it in reprints, they could have Bill Finger's name. That was the only loophole they had.
Mm-hmm.
But this new renegotiation changed that to where, from then on, only Bob Kane could be created, and that was it.
Yep. But why did they agree to that?
It was a very good contract. It was, yeah, it's the Bob Kane contract is always shown to pros of warnings of when you get into a partnership with like another person, what to avoid.
Okay.
So it was pretty ironclad. So the company, so DC, eventually fired Bill Finger for inquiring about the creation of a company healthcare program.
I love that whenever someone tries to, you know, help, you know, the employees of a company, it tends to get them shit canned.
I mean, the same thing happened with Siegel and Schuster.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it sucks. But
so when was that? What year was that?
This was in the 60s.
Okay, so
This is the late 60s.
All right.
Soon, stress, constant poverty, and his lifelong drinking problem took their toll on him. Bill Finger passed away in 1974 at the age of 59. He was survived by his ex-wife, Portia, and his son. So he died pretty poor.
Drunk, probably.
He battled alcoholism most of his life.
I mean, a lot of those guys drank. It's just, the times
were... Yeah, but, I mean, his was pretty bad.
Yeah.
And he had crippling social anxiety and things like that, which is what Kane kind of took advantage of, the fact that he really didn't interact with the public as much. So
he didn't have the people skills to negotiate for himself. And
yeah, well, that's the problem. He didn't even know he could negotiate.
That's true.
Because it was done behind his back.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, eventually he did make money off of properties like Green Lantern, but then again, creator rights weren't a thing, so even though he's credited, he didn't get any money from that.
Yeah.
And by the time Hal Jordan took the place, there was really no money to be had anyways, so...
Okay,
so after a year after Finger's death, then-publisher of DC Comics, Carmen Infantino, wrote a touching eulogy to Finger that gave credit where credit was long overdue, in full contradiction to Kane's long-standing claim that his creation of Batman was a solo act. Infantino wrote, "Batman has lost a father, one of his two real fathers, that is, the greatest product of the Bill Finger Bob Kane team." And this was a very huge problem with Kane.
Oh, I can imagine. So.
Yeah,
I mean,
he threatened to sue. Then they worked something out, but yeah, this was a huge issue. So, what about the artwork? So now switching back to just Bob Kane. What about that? He was the artist, right?
Yeah, I mean,
in 1965, Kane stated in no uncertain terms, "In the golden age of Batman, I penciled and inked and lettered my strip myself. The truth is, I still draw about 90% of all Batman stories."
In the 60s?
Yes. "I do all the stories for Batman bi-monthly and share Detective Comics with Infantino, who draws every other one. Infantino now does all the covers for Batman and Detective Comics." Okay, so in the 60s, the only name that was still appearing on these stories was Bob Kane. That was it. And again, this is in the 60s by the time he had clearly stopped drawing the books.
Yeah, because the art was too different.
No, it's completely different artwork. But again, he said, "Well, my name's on there. That's my art." And no one could argue that it wasn't credited to him because of, well, and we'll find out right now. So, Bob Kane did draw the first Batman story in Detective 27. No one disputes this. Batman's second adventure was also credited to Kane, but the style is totally different.
Yeah.
And the story was clearly drawn by someone else.
Was that the Monster Man?
Yeah, but no one knows who drew it.
Oh, that sucks.
And that's the thing. If you do read the first issue, the first Detective 27, then you read Detective 28... it's completely
different. No, I have read them.
Yeah, and you can tell. It's completely different artwork.
That's awful.
But
no, I know that, but it's like, it's that sucks that, like, this guy, whoever the fuck drew this, will never get credit.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, by early 1940, Kane's roughs were finished by one of his assistants, 17-year-old Jerry Robinson, who had been selling ice cream at a resort when Kane met and hired him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the story behind him hiring him is just really weird. It's not pervert, I think. He was selling ice cream at a resort.
Okay.
And they got to talking. He's like, "Oh, you like Batman?" And he's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "You want to be my assistant?"
It's weird.
And Robinson was like, "Okay." Other early bad adventures in Detective Comics were finished by Sheldon Moldoff and George Russo's. So roughs are essentially, they're the underlying foundation of the pencils. Jack Kirby used to do this all the time back
It's like when you see in those sketchbooks, right, where you see them draw.
It's like a very loose outline.
Yeah.
Like, Jack Kirby used to do this back in the day for, like, a lot of the Marvel titles. He'd do loose roughs, hand them over to the artists, and then they'd actually build up on them.
Okay.
But everyone would be credited. This, though, came by the 40s, would do the roughs, and then his assistants would finish them. Completely.
Okay.
So when Batman's popularity exploded, Kane would hire several artists to help him keep up with the demand. Batman was eventually drawn by a host of Kane ghosts, including James Robinson, Jim Mooney, Stan Kay, Win Mortimer, Mort Metzgen, Dick Sprang, Lou Schwartz, Sheldon Moldoff, Charles Paris, Carmen Infantino, Fred Ray, and Jack Burnley.
See, like, how can you say that that's your art when you have that many fucking people?
Well, because your credit is in the contract, it says. And the funny thing, here's the funny thing. So according to Mark Evanier, he's seen it all, knows it all. There are two kinds of Bob Kane ghosts. Bob contracted with DC to provide a certain number of pages per month, and he hired men like Sheldon Moldoff and Lou Sayer Schwartz to draw them. But DC needed more pages of Batman art than the number, and so the DC editors hired men like Dick Sprang, Jim Mooney, Winslow Mortimer, and Kurt Swan to draw stories that never went anywhere near Kane or his studio.
Kurt Swan did a lot of the Superman.
Yeah. But he also did a lot of early Batman. A lot of people just don't know that.
Hmm.
As per Kane's deal with DC, no one else's name could appear on them but his. But it would be wrong to suggest that Mooney, for example, was a Kane assistant, or Sprang or Infantino or other about two dozen others who did Batman art for DC. Ghosting was a common practice in the comic industry at the time, but Kane took it to extremes. Each Kane ghost artist apparently thought he was Kane's only ghost. Kane viewed them as employees and never discussed with them the fact that there were others.
That's fucked up.
Okay, so
that sounds like a husband like cheating on his wife,
well,
kind of thing.
Here's the crazy thing. So there were two types. So there was the ones Bob Kane had as his assistants,
mm-hmm.
which ghosted for him. And then because of these contracts, DC also hired Batman artists that they just needed to fill up the books. Because like comics back then had a lot of backup stories, like additional stories.
Yeah.
And so they hired like Dick Sprang and stuff like that. But no, the assistants were never ever told that there were other assistants working under him. So you look at that list I gave you, the whole James Robinson, Jim Mooney and all them.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys ended up going on to create some like pretty big characters. Jack Burnley created Starman and Carmen Infantino, and you have people like Dick Sprang. It's just most of them became giants in the industry, but they were Kane's ghosts. And for a long time, there are...
This sounds like a horror story that you're making.
It essentially is.
I mean...
But yeah, Kane had this weird system in place where all of his artists didn't know each other existed, and they thought that they were just assisting him, when in reality, they
It
were,
sounds like a sweatshop.
No, it was.
For
it,
comics.
It was. All credited to one man.
Awful.
So Kane left comic books entirely in 1943... preferring to pencil the Batman Daily newspaper strip. So, like, Spider-Man still has one that's ongoing.
Yeah.
Stanley still writes that one. But there was... That happened with Batman, too. It clearly hasn't lasted as long as the Spider-Man one, but... So there was Batman newspaper strip.
Spider-Man's got one?
Yeah.
Really?
Stanley and... the artist is the person who did Superior Foes.
So that's just, like, a short little...
It's just a weekly strip.
Is it, like, a fun thing?
Yeah.
Or it's not like that... I don't know the name of that one in the newspaper that's like this weird pulp thing. That sounds cool though. Is that only in like New York or something? I've never seen that.
It's syndicated, but I don't know if it's syndicated in
LA Times.
Yeah.
Because we're in LA, so.
It might be only in the East Coast. Okay. Steve Lieber. He's the one who draws it.
Okay.
Where was I? Okay, so Kane left comic books entirely in 1943, preferring to pencil the Batman Daily newspaper strip. In the first year or two of Batman, Kane turned a lot of it over to his assistants, especially when the newspaper strip started, and he preferred his time penciling. When he preferred to spend his penciling time on that, and eventually he wasn't doing any of it. So this thing that he quit DC Comics to focus on,
he quit also.
He eventually just had his assistants.
But he could basically just get away with it because it's his creation.
Oh yeah, because no matter what, it has to be credited to him.
Awful, awful, awful.
Kane's work on the Daily Strip was inked by Charles Paris. The Sunday Strip was mostly by Jack Burnley. So again, Burnley is the one who pretty much drew it all. And it was,
do all these guys have anything to say about Bob Kane? All these people that...
Well, most of them are dead, but back then they tried to. But again, contracts. It didn't matter if they, whatever they said, it didn't matter.
If they were alive right now, what do you think they could say? I mean, they'd have some stories.
I mean, like Jerry Robinson had, before he passed away, had a lot to say.
All right.
But I mean, again, no one seems to care because to a lot of people, Bob Kane is you know,
he's the guy.
He's Bob Kane. We trust Bob Kane.
Yeah.
So Kane got stories from DC written by his pal Bill Finger, or his, and I put pal in,
yeah,
in
not Superman's, no, pal, like a,
or Gardner Fox hired. So he hired other artists to pencil and ink them, and then relentlessly plastered Bob Kane's signature on the finished products, loudly and publicly maintaining that he, and he alone, was its sole creator, and DC never said otherwise. So he would do this on multiple products. Like, anything that was released, he'd get other people to write and draw, and then just, I created it. It's all mine. So Kane's lucrative agreement with DC lasted until 1968, when the company renegotiated their deal with him and stopped buying artwork from him. So around this time, they were just like, you know what? You still have your merchandise deal, you have all that, but we're not going to take your artwork anymore.
Yeah.
Your artwork.
What's the point?
Yeah. I mean. By then, most of Kane Ghosts were working for DC directly. So, yeah, by this time, all those guys had already risen.
That's
already
good.
Had their own careers.
Gardner Fox.
Yeah, so, okay. By then, most of Kane's Ghosts were already working for DC directly. Meanwhile, Kane's childhood dreams came true as his slice of the Batman comic, movie, and TV series fortune made him rich and famous. So, by the time he ended up quitting, the show took off. Merchandising went through the roof. So,
awesome.
While they weren't accepting his artwork, he was getting even more money than he could possibly dream of.
Cool.
So from the 60s to the 80s.
At this point, Bill Finger's dead.
And poor. Bob Kane is making out like a robber. That's
awesome. And by awesome, I mean horrible. And this is the worst thing I've ever heard.
So going back to Batman number one. So they used to do this back in the days where like Action Comics came out.
And then Superman.
Detective Comics. Yeah, and then they would release...
They still kind of do that now.
Yeah, so then they release a comic with the character's name. So Batman number one, another book credited solely to Bob Kane, featured the debut of Batman's arch-nemesis, the Joker, influenced by Dick Tracy's outlandish Rogues Gallery. Jerry Robinson claims to have invented the Clown Prince of Crime. Jerry Robinson recalls, I felt that I was part of a team. Unfortunately, Bob did not feel that way. Most of all, with Bill. He should have credited Bill as co-creator, because I know, I was there. The Joker was my creation, and Bill wrote the first story from my concept. Bill created all the other characters, Penguin, Riddler, Catwoman. He was very innovative. The slogans, the Dynamic Duo, and Gotham City were all created by Bill Finger. That was Bill Finger.
Mm-hmm. And those are things that we associate,
yes,
that are synonymous with Batman.
Yeah.
All these characters.
The thing that Bob Kane really created was that there's this guy, and he's in the city.
Did he do any of the characters? Did he create
no.
Anything? I mean, if he invented fucking Tiger Shark or something, I would have been like...
No. All this was other people's creations that he was given, like, because of his contract, he was allowed to say he created.
I'm shaking my head.
Especially the Joker, that's completely Jerry Robinson. Bob Kane refused to admit that, to the point where he would make up stories about how... Okay, so the legendary, he comes from the whole The Man Who Laughs, right?
Yeah.
Is not true.
Really?
that's one of Bob Kane's many stories, and that's the one that stuck the most. Jerry Robinson says that it was completely different, that it didn't come from that Conrad Viet thing, that instead it came from an actual Joker's card that he had seen. And
it looked like that.
The original sketch of the Joker was a card sketch with like a jester hat.
Yeah.
And he says that some of it is even a caricature of Bob Kane himself.
That's awesome.
But again, Kane had multiple reasons for why characters were invented. He never stuck to one story, but people believed him because he was Bob Kane.
That's great.
So according to Neil Gaiman, so here's what Neil Gaiman has to say on this whole situation.
Oh, hey.
No one else did anything. Okay, no one else who did anything got any credit in Bob Kane's head. The other people who drew Batman, even Neil Adams or Frank Miller, in Bob's mind were just his ghosts. The only thing that was important to Bob Kane was Bob Kane. So, and this is true.
So Scott Snyder's a ghost.
Well, here's the funny thing.
Stuart Snyder, whatever.
When No, it's Scott.
Oh, who's Stuart? Oh, that's the Cartoon Network guy.
So, when Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams working the character, when Frank Miller was working on the character.
Yeah, those are great.
Bob Kane still considered himself that he did those things. Because my name says I created it.
That's actually ridiculous.
Yeah, and he would tell people that it was him. Like, he would tell people
that,
like,
he told him
at
about
parties, like, oh, that was my, like, you know, I allowed them to do that. Like, He believed it was him, and he believed.
See, part of me is thinking that there's something wrong with him.
I don't. I just think he's an asshole.
I'm still maintaining that. But
I think saying something's wrong with him is almost like softening.
No, I'm just saying, like, there's got to be some reason, because I feel like even an asshole would have like some.
Dude, he was just a prick. Like, he was just a guy who wanted all the credit, who was a glory hog. So, this continued throughout his life. Like, even
after... When did he die?
Well, so when Bob Kane passed away in 1998...
He got to all those Batman movies, too?
Yep, and got all that money.
Fucking shit.
Yes, he got so much merchandising.
So, Bruce Timm and Paul Dini are ghostwriting for
yes.
Bob... Fuck off.
When Bob Kane passed away in 1998, he was 83 years old. Yeah, I know.
God damn it.
Kane was survived by his wife, Elizabeth, his daughter, Deborah, and his sister, Doris.
Doris.
So the bizarre inscription on Kane's comic book-shaped grave marker, complete with bat signal reads... Okay, so let me just say, his grave is shaped like an open comic book. His gravestone.
Yeah.
And there's like an inscripted like bat signal with like the... Like I'm not even joking, that's how it looks. So here's what's written on his grave. Robert Kane, a.k.a. Bob Kane. God bestowed a dream upon Bob Kane, blessed with divine inspiration and a rich imagination. Bob created a legacy known as Batman. Introduced in a May 1939 comic book, Batman grew from a tiny acorn into an American icon. A hand of God creation, Batman and his world personify the eternal struggle of good versus evil, with God's laws prevailing in the end.
What?
Bob Kane, Bruce Wayne, Batman, they are one and the same. Bob infused his dual identity character with his own attributes. Goodness, kindness, compassion, sensitivity, generosity, intelligence, integrity, courage, purity of spirit, and a love of all mankind. Batman is known as the Dark Knight, but through his deeds, he walks in the light of a higher power, as did his creator, Bob Kane. That is all written on his gravestone.
That's fucking embarrassing.
That entire thing is written. This is the same man, as we said last week, who was buried with a shit tons of Batman toys. And I don't mean just Batman, like, 89 toys. He was buried with those multicolored Batman toys and shit like that.
Yeah.
Again, 1998. A lot of those movies had come out.
Yeah, oh my fucking God.
He was buried with shit tons of Batman memorabilia.
So he had George Clooney toys next to him, didn't
yeah.
he? That's amazing.
He had tons of memorabilia on top of him. The legally mandated omission of Bill Finger's name as a Batco creator, a condition insisted on by Bob Kane, continues to this day. So, how do you feel about Bob Kane?
Bob Kane, to me, sounds like a mega shit.
He's a super villain.
He's
really a super villain.
Can I ask, is he the biggest piece of shit in comics?
In terms of what he did, like legally and shit like that, and like robbing people of credit, probably.
Yeah.
In terms of personality, maybe, but there's a few who like beat him in terms of how shitty they are as people.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's no evidence that Bob was a racist or that he was, like, a pedophile or anything like that.
He sounds to be, like, a very egotistical guy who wanted money.
Very egotistical, very greedy. He was a thief.
Yeah. But to me, it doesn't sound like he was a guy that got, you know, drugs and beat his wife or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, she's always happy and whenever she shows up in that Batman movie.
Yeah, see...
So. That's his wife, right?
I mean, yes, it's his wife, and there's a lot of professional comic book pros who thought that those cameos were bullshit.
Oh,
because they thought that she didn't deserve to be in.
Oh no, movies. Why should she?
so yeah, it's fucking ridiculous how he is. But I mean, there are worse people, like comic book professionals, who've just done heinous shit.
Yeah.
But in terms of like the business side, he might be the worst, because no one has gone out of their way to dick people as much. Stan Lee kind of has.
Oh.
His is a little more...
It's not nice. It's not cool to say bad things about Stan Lee.
Yeah, I mean...
Especially now.
There are some genuine, like, problematic shit that he's done in the past where it's like, that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
But nothing to the extent that Bob Kane went. Bob Kane is like the bad guy of comics. Like, he's like... I can't think of anyone who's like... as bad,
like not even marginally bad, just like
there's nasty people who say nasty things and like have weird fucking viewpoints, but yeah. So I think how I'm gonna
fuck off.
Yeah, he's horrible.
Yeah, that's fucking stupid.
And so that's why if you read a lot of Batman comics, you'll notice every now and then there'll be a panel where somehow Bill Finger's name is slipped in or hidden.
Yeah,
because comic book pros. Even the people who head DC now, even they wish they could put Bill Finger's name, but they can't. They're legally not allowed to.
Yeah, because, you know, every time it's a cartoon or something, or anyone just talking about it, they always mention Bill Finger,
but Batman. But they can't, like, credit him. And it sucks. But, like, and it's funny, everyone wants to.
Yeah.
Comic book pros, artists, writers, editors, inkers, like Dan DiDio, Bob Harris, despite my problems with Bob Harris and Dan DiDio and all them, they still want to give fucking credit to Bill Finger, but the law will not allow them to.
Yeah.
So no matter what, this will always be the case unless something crazy happens. But I just don't see that happening. So Bob Kane will always be known as the
creator of Batman.
So I'm going to end this with, and I guess this is how I'll end every episode. Might as well.
On Wednesday Comics?
Yeah, with a quote or a little story.
Okay.
So this is, okay, so let me pull this up. Okay, so this is, Jim Steranko. If you go on his Twitter, he likes to tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
Who
is Jim Steranko?
Jim Steranko is a legendary artist. He was mentored by Jack Kirby. One day I'll have to have an episode on him for how awesome he is.
Okay.
He was an escape artist, a motorcycle bandit.
Okay.
Yeah, motorcycle bandit.
We also need a Jack Kirby episode,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but... So, he tells stories about his encounters and just different things. So, here's... Someone asked him on Twitter, you know, because you have stories about Bob Kane. And eventually, once this story got out, eventually at conventions, he told more stories.
Okay.
So... Okay. I hadn't encountered Kane in my travels, but at one rockin' SDCC, so San Diego Comic Con, an associate asked me if I wanted to meet him, and walked me into a hallway. There he was in a small group of people, wearing patent leather shoes and an ascot. He was like Vitamin fucking Flintheart in a Dick Tracy cartoon. For years, I had heard how he'd taken credit for Bill Finger's contributions, in addition to half his pay, and other tales from his associates. But nothing aces an in-person encounter. Okay. We were introduced, and Kane began... Okay, by the way, you'll notice... Stranko kind of talks...
He talks like a... I'm catching that.
Yeah.
One rock in SD.
Yeah. I mean, he's that kind of guy,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay. We were introduced, and Kane began talking about my Batman chapter in the history of comics, which treated him and everyone else very respectfully. He felt I credited Robinson and Finger, both of whom I knew intimately too much. Kane, a.k.a. Khan, was beyond pretentious, an intolerable ass as pompous as they came. I bit my tongue while he regaled us with his many achievements. The group was waiting for an elevator, which they stepped onto as the door opened. Our conversation ended, but not before he said, "See you later, Jim baby," and cuffed me across the face like some Rat Pack street gesture he'd seen from a cheap flick. The doors closed. I was stunned by his sheer audacity of a stranger like him to lay a hand on me, and boiling with anger. That night I couldn't sleep, and the next morning began combing the halls for his Bat Majesty. Around noon, I found him in another group, which I walked into. "Good to see you, Bob, baby," I said, then bitch-slapped him across the face. But this time, there was no elevator door closing between us. I stood there for about 15 seconds, waiting. He did nothing. I turned and left, but I regret it now. I regret that he didn't do anything about it. Even though he was at least a head taller than me, I wouldn't have minded bleeding at all for one more opportunity to give Kane the kind of bat lesson that Finger, Robinson, Sprang, and others only dreamed of. Finger was the creative force behind Batman. All the cool bat elements are his concepts.
That's amazing. That's one of the greatest stories I've ever heard. Because I never imagined these... by the way, in my head, these are all old white guys.
Oh, no, they were.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, the fact I'm imagining a brawl between these guys, just sound, and for the integrity of you know, comics, too,
yeah,
is just amazing.
It's wonderful. So, yeah. So,
that's Bob Kane.
That was our Bob Kane episode.
Oh,
so, we'll see you next week with... I don't know, whatever happens in the world of comics.
All right.
So, same obscure time?
Same obscure channel.
Quick thing, if you've made it past the music, I mean, good job if you did that. That's pretty cool. After recording this podcast and talking at length about the mistreatment of Bill Finger and him not receiving any credit, something kind of cool happened. It was announced that Bill Finger, for the first time in 75 years of the creation of Batman, will be receiving creator credit on the upcoming Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, and some upcoming media. Now, if that extends to the comics, is yet to be seen, but this is a really great step forward for giving credit to a man who, after listening to this episode, you'll see, is possibly the real reason why we have Batman to begin with. So I thought I'd just take the time to just... say this. We'll likely announce again in next week's episode in case anyone missed it. So, yeah, it's wonderful news. So, thanks for listening.